If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. And after a rather weird Sunday in the NFL, where the rule book should have really been ripped to shreds, we'll talk about the playoff picture. Steelers, Pats, the Jags back in the playoff for the first time in the decade. The Seahawks collapse, the changing of the guard of the NFC. Loads for us to tuck into. This is the Gridiron Show. Welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. Will Gavin, Ollie Hunter and Gridiron editor Matthew Sherry on the line today. I was going to say evening, boys, but the problem with the time concept of a podcast is that somebody could be listening to it in the morning, and now I've confused myself. So I'll just say hello. Hello!
Hey, hey.
What? All right. Oh, come on. That is disgusting. You're unbelievable. I'm going to put it out there. Well, I have put it out there. A poll. Whose intros do you like more, Will Gavin's or Ollie Hunter's?
I like Ollie Hunter's more, so it's
fine. You know...
You see, you wanted me to bite on that, and I'm like, I much prefer it when you do the intros. So you can do it every single time.
I don't want to do it every single time. You should be doing it.
No, you go ahead, mate.
No, yours, this is the Gridiron Show with Will Gavin. We all know that.
The Gridiron Show in association with Will Gavin. You did a great show on Friday. I definitely listened.
You definitely didn't listen.
I listened to the first 2 minutes and the last 2 minutes to make sure it was topped and tailed.
So
you could have done anything in that middle of 50 minutes and I'd never have known. But we didn't have any complaints on Twitter, so it's fine.
Matthew Sherry, how many times did we think Will Gavin had watched Star Wars in a space of 24 hours? Was it four?
Yeah, I think four is what we ultimately landed on.
I think it was four, yeah.
I've seen it twice. My wife is going to see it again with a school friend tomorrow, and I'm contemplating whether or not to go with them. Or, you know, spend my time doing other things. I might go with them. I haven't decided yet.
I mean, I know you try and jump at the chance for any time that you don't have to spend with your wife, so...
It's less that. It's more the school friend that she's going to watch it with, who is a lovely person, but I've been to the cinema with her once before, and she is not code compliant for anyone who listens to that BBC one. She is
Why
very
are you not mentioning that BBC she's one. Very... It's not like we're competitors with those guys.
I don't know. We talk a lot about movies, guys. If you're a fan of Kermit and May, you know what I'm talking about. She's not like somebody who's like taking her shoes off and eating smelly food and stuff like that. But there's nothing wrong with emotionally reacting to a film, i.e., laughing, crying, you know, jumping at a scary bit, whatever it is, the elicited reaction you're meant to get that you naturally particularly get with an audience. But it's when she like turns around in the middle of a film and goes, "Oh my god, what the F?" Like, and actually speaks out loud her feelings about it, and it's too much for me.
I quite like the sound of this.
It's too much. You'd get on with her really well.
Okay.
It was very difficult for me to decide who to sit next to between you, my wife and Adam when we went to see it on the first night, because I just wanted to sit there and enjoy it with no interruptions, no slaps on my legs, no turning around and looking at me in wide-eyed awe, and yet I got all of that from you, Ollie, and more.
Yeah. Ollie.
No, I can't help it.
That is very much in my wheelhouse in general life, but I just don't do it at the cinema. It's not acceptable.
Yeah, but the thing is, you loved it. You did love it. A couple of times I could hear you chuckle to yourself, Will, and...
I do often find myself laughing at the jokes that a lot of other people aren't necessarily laughing at. Yeah. Like, having a heartier laugh at some of the jokes. The second time I saw it with a much smaller audience, because it was at, like, 10 in the morning. And so the laughs were less from the auditorium as a whole, and yet I still laughed pretty loud every time.
Well, it's because you're a loud laugh.
What was your favourite one, Will?
My favourite showing?
No, your favourite... Your favourite of the jokes,
none of it's... there's going to be no discussion of any content whatsoever. I've got to prepare myself, because we're doing a film review on the TalkSport show tonight, in which we will definitely talk about Star Wars, and I've got to figure out a way to talk about it without mentioning any spoilers. So I've got to practice for that, and I'm going to start doing that right now. I did, however, have a Christmas party on Saturday... where my friend Adam, and you've probably seen on social media, etc.
Sorry, what?
That the
you had a Christmas party.
Yeah, I did, Ollie, and you weren't invited because it wasn't my Christmas party and not my place to invite you.
This is so low class, Will. You're doing this to Ollie on seemingly a weekly basis.
Look, I have a group of friends that Ollie is an acquaintance with, but not necessarily close with. The close group of friends who all went to university together had a little get-together at somebody's flat on Saturday. Why would Ollie be invited to that?
No, this is a weird thing that you've got going on. Like, I heard about a
social life outside of the podcast.
I heard about the Burrito chat as well the other week. And I had to agree with Ollie on all aspects of it. What would be the problem with Ollie coming and eating a burrito with you and a friend?
Yeah. It wasn't coming and eating a burrito with me and a friend. Going out for a sit-down lunch at a nice Mexican restaurant with somebody I hadn't seen in like 2.5 years.
And what's the problem with Ollie being there?
Yeah.
Because I'm catching up with an old friend. I'd like to do it just on a one-on-one basis.
Yeah, it's really weird, Will.
Do you know the best thing about all of this? Matthew Sherry does listen to the podcast when he's not on it.
Yeah, well, I don't, I'm sorry.
You know, there's just a litany.
I have to listen to you two's thoughts on the NFL via phone calls, text messages, social media on such a regular basis that I can handle not rehearing it in podcast form. It's fine.
You know, that's fine. I think we've got to the bottom of why I haven't been invited to any of these Christmas meals. So it's great. Sherry, thank you for your invite.
Next time he wants his cats feeding Ollie when he's away on holiday. Why doesn't he just get one of these other friends to go and do it for him? Scrub.
One of them did look after my cats for a solid 2 weeks while we went away, actually. So it's not something I've ever asked Ollie to do.
That's true, because you know that your cats hate me.
Yeah, so. There is that. The point I was trying to make was back to the Star Wars point, was that there was, like you will have seen on social media, etc., that some fans have really rallied against it. And this one guy hated it. Like, literally thought it was the worst Star Wars film he'd seen. And I tried not to have an argument with him and ended up having four separate arguments across the course of a 12-hour night. So, I'm quite passionate about it, it's fair to say.
Yeah, but it was fine because you invited him to the Christmas lunch.
It was his Christmas lunch and I was invited
to it.
Well,
there we go. Once again.
Imagine, Ollie, if you were there, you could have backed him up because I'm assuming you also are a big
fan. I had Adam Clarkson to back me up, so it was fine.
Oh, you bestie. Oh, okay.
And my wife backed me up as well.
No, fine. Wife as well.
What do you mean, new bestie?
Yeah, it's fine. What? Oh, yeah, Matt, thanks for the invite for Christmas Day. I will see you on Christmas Day. That's true, friend.
You're working with me till 6 a.m. How the hell are you going to get to Hartlepool?
Drive. Car.
Enjoy that. What is it, 5 hours, Matt?
Yeah.
Sherry's going to meet me halfway.
Yeah,
you're going to get together.
Me and Ollie are spending Christmas at a service.
At a Nottingham-based service station where you are going to enjoy a KFC.
Whoa.
And a bag of Haribo.
It's Christmas. Cornish pasty.
Somebody told me recently, and I've just refused to believe it and not looked into it any further, that KFC is the traditional Christmas meal in Japan.
I think it's China, isn't it? I thought it was, but maybe it is Japan.
What?
Yeah, there is definitely...
is that true?
Yeah, 100%.
What?
Matt Sherry disgusted. It's a massive thing. Maybe it is Japan. I actually, in my head, thought
it's Japan.
It was China. There
Japan,
you go.
It says it here.
Apologise.
I Oriental-based racism. Because I was so confident it was nonsense.
No, it's 100% true.
Well, Gavin, I'm going to say this now because I'll definitely forget on the preview pod that we'll do later on this week. What about us going to have those Chinese devils on horseback?
Well, you keep changing the name of these.
I don't know what they are.
I'm sure we've talked about these on a podcast in the past, but Matt Sherry, one thing I will say for Ollie, away from his unnecessary jealousy over me having other friends, there's one thing he does amazingly, and that is Christmas snacks. Ollie has perfected the perfect Christmas snack, and it is a water chestnut.
Yep.
Cut in half.
Yep.
placed into a sliced open date.
Where you've taken the stone out, replaced it with the water chestnut.
Wrapped in streaky bacon.
Smoked streaky bacon. It's got to be smoked.
And then...
all streaky bacon has to be smoked, Ollie.
Well, and then baked in the oven. It's...
And Ollie, me and you can make some absolute magic happen.
Matt, please, when we are having these delicacies on Saturday watching the Packers-Vikings game, you have to make them yourself as well and tell me what you think of them. They are one of the best things you'll ever try.
Ollie can send you the recipe and we'll enjoy them together.
Well, you've just told him it.
Hundreds of miles apart.
So Ollie, me and you are doing a Japanese Christmas in the Midlands. Is that the plan?
That's exactly what we're doing. Yeah.
Then a welcome break.
And then finding a hotel bar which is still open on a hotel bar that's still open on Christmas Day and going to watch the two Christmas Day games as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be less roby than the Atlanta motel that we stayed in, me and Clancy, so I'm ready for it.
Wonderful stuff. Should we talk about the mess that was the NFL this weekend? A glorious mess, but a mess nonetheless.
Do you know what Christmas is in Japanese?
Apparently we're not talking about it, Will. I want to hear this now, Ollie.
It's Kuri Sumasu. Kuri Sumasu.
What's welcome break in the Midlands on the M1?
It is Midorandu.
Oh my god, whatever's going to happen now, I'm really excited both and terrified about how offensive / unoffensive Ollie might be here.
Midorandu di no
D. It's not German.
I don't know how to say it says D D E D D di no ueru kam uberiku.
If any of the vast Japanese members of the Gridiron listenership would like to get in touch and send us a little audio memo of how we pronounce that correctly, please do.
Let's talk about the football this weekend, and let's start with the obvious place to start from this weekend's football. Of course, Jimmy G and his last... No, I'm not going to do that. The Pittsburgh
Larry
Steelers and the...
No.
The Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots having somewhat of a classic on Sunday evening football. Certainly, Rob Gronkowski having a career day, despite the fact he probably should have been banned for that game. And the Steelers managing to find a number of ways to throw this one away in a game that they managed to keep much tighter than expected. But let's talk about the game overall, and then we'll talk about those two last-minute decisions. Fair result? I can't believe I'm asking Matt this, but Matt Sherry, fair result?
Not really, no. I thought Pittsburgh controlled the game, did everything that they needed to do. And for all the way they lost, and for all the Patriots were really clutch at the end, they were handed the game on a silver platter after the touchdown, because it's almost forgotten now the Smith-Schuster play, or the Schuster-Smith, which I always got that the wrong way around, but it's almost forgotten just how bad the Patriots defended that. And also on the Jesse James play that wasn't, that was a complete coverage bust by the Patriots as well. So I thought there was...
Is there some reason to be concerned about the Patriots in the trenches? Because the offensive line had some real problems.
I don't think that is the problem. I agreed with Romo in that he's the only person I've heard say this, and it's kind of what I believe on the run defense, is they allowed the running game to go to a level because they think they can get off the field on third down. The problem is that when you run into a game like last night where you don't, it's a big problem. But that's the way they play defense. It's the way they've played defense this season. Their run defense isn't as good as it's been in the past, but this is the way they're trying to play around it. And I think ultimately they can do that because, I mean, even last night, Pittsburgh dominated a lot of that game, but they were never out of sight. It never got out of hand. And really, without the Brady interception, it's a really close game all the way through, because 8 points is still a close game, but it's still 8 points. You still need a two-point conversion at one point. So I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue really was their pass rush on third down. And that's a major issue that they need to solve moving forward. But yeah, I thought Pittsburgh deserved to win the game, but they didn't win the game. And the reality is that the Patriots keep winning games like that, and at some point it isn't lucky. I mean, you mentioned, Will, on the tweet of how Michael Lombardi had said that the Patriots are coached not to extend over the goal line like that. And the reality is that you see so many examples where the rules have been drummed into these guys, that they know it at the end of the game, and that's why they don't get into these situations, and other teams too and do, and that isn't lucky. That is a culture that's been developed over years. But all in all, I would say Pittsburgh probably deserve to win the game.
There's two incidents you referred to there which need to be kind of covered. One is the end of that Oakland Raiders Dallas Cowboys game, a weird game overall, a game where the Cowboys played seriously got their nuts out on the table and showed them for all to see, going for it, the fake punt on a 4th and 11th in their own territory, going for it on 4th and 1 from their own, what was it, 39-yard line. They had so many occasions on Sunday night where they really tried to force the game, and even so, their defense letting up a couple of drives to the Raiders in the second half. The one to open the second half, where the Raiders were really strong, went on that kind of 7 minute, 9 play. No, it's 11 odd play, 90 yard drive, and the one right at the end as well. But the game doesn't need much discussing beyond that, because neither of these teams are going to the playoffs. I mean, the Cowboys still have a chance of getting in, but actually I think the Lions, the Falcons, and at least one of the other teams in the wildcard mix already have the tiebreaker over the Cowboys. So they'd have to rely on a lot of teams losing both games and them winning both games for them to get in. But we had the extending the ball over the line for the touchback issue, which we've discussed 3 times this year already. We had it on the play in the Rams-Seahawks game earlier in the year, which the Rams could have and probably should have won that game. And it's amazing to see what their development's been over the last 10 weeks. We'll get to that as well. We saw it with Austin Seferian Jenkins for the Jets as well, in a game that was much tighter than many expected and could have had a real impact on that game. And then we've had it with this one. That rule needs a serious looking at. And the catch rule, there were so many instances of it. The Jesse James one is going to be the big one that we spot from the weekend. But we had the Carolina challenge in the Green Bay game for the catch. We had Michael Thomas had a couple of occasions where he had catches that were brought back on reviews. The whole thing is so convoluted at the moment. They have to find a way to simplify it. And I think, just to kind of expand on that, sorry, I think my problem is the rule about things like control to the ground and everything like that. And they got the Jesse James call right by the rule book. The problem is those things were designed for a time where we didn't have 8 HD cameras and we didn't have replay reviews and we didn't have... These are rules which are not really designed for an era where some common sense can come in because a referee can watch the catch 17 times over before making a decision. And actually, I think they are too ticky-tacky and too to the level of the law, and it almost gives people an out, an excuse to go to kind of not give a game-winning changing play.
But you say that, but I honestly think this year is at least better than previous years, because that whole survive the ground thing that they've added is clear as day, and whether you like it or not, I mean, everybody would look at that and say, well, in the back of my mind I think it's a catch, but at least this year they're calling them the same way every time, seemingly, and that's not been the case in previous years. And I can understand why they're trying to add to the rule as well, because I personally don't want to see a game with 4 fumbles in because of bang-bang plays and where they immediately rule it a completion when it isn't. And I just think it's a tricky one. I mean, you say there they should let the referees use common sense, but isn't that then just letting them use their opinion on the day? And isn't that the issue, that we don't want judgment calls? You want a black and white call that is indisputable and hard to argue against. I mean, I think it's a tough one, and I don't think there's an easy solution. I at least think this year they're calling them all the same way. And I was originally critical last night, but I've gone back and looked at a couple of others this season, and I mean, the rule's the rule, they're enforcing it. I mean, teams need to start doing what we've just said the Patriots are coached to do, and not extend the ball in that situation. You've got, I know it's easier said than done, but you've got to play to what the rules are, and I think the rules are better than they were. They're perfect. I don't think the alternative's perfect either. Okay. Everyone's saying now, who cares if there's more fumbles? But you can guarantee, if they move that, if they change it to just 2 feet down is possession, then when there's a load of fumbles on Bang Bang players, people will be like, oh, that's ridiculous.
Well, okay, well, let's talk about exactly... Because this is my problem, is that they're taking out an element of the game which makes it more exciting, and it goes back to the Dez Bryant catch, which I still maintain to this day the right decision was made by the letter of the law that day as well. But what you're doing, and I'd like to hear Ollie's opinion on this as well, is you are restricting plays which are making the game potentially more exciting by having to play like the Patriots and have to go, right, we're not going to extend the ball, we're not going to try and reach for the end zone, we're not going to try and... Yeah, and it's the same with the touchback rule. By saying we're not going to have that in the game, you're actually making people more cautious in the way that they're playing football, and it gets less exciting. Why are we penalising players for trying to score a touchdown? That's really frustrating.
Yeah, I get that, but... The Patriots, I'm not saying they're successful because they are the only ones that abide by this and have this mantra of not going in or not extending and whatever, but they know what the rules are, and that's how they're playing the game by. And okay, Jesse James was looking for the glory. However, had they scored a touchdown, then they'd have still left 28 seconds.
28 seconds and two timeouts.
Two timeouts. So, actually, regardless of the rule or not, the clever call would be to go down at the half-yard line and complete the catch, because it was never a catch.
No, but that's like the Ahmad Bradshaw thing, isn't it? Like, what play... There was a play in the Seahawks game this weekend where... Russell Wilson, and this is not me singling out the Seahawks as people will imagine I am, but it's just the example that springs to mind. The Rams went for it on 4th and 1, either 20-0 up or 13-0 up in the first half, when they were in kickable field goal range, decided to go for it. Michael Wilhoit picked the ball off 12 or 13 yards down the field, stepped out of bounds, celebrated like he'd just made a game-changing play, but actually, by catching the ball instead of batting it to the ground, he'd cost his team 13 yards field position. And that's... But the thing is, that's not your thinking as a player. You don't think to yourself, oh, I'm going to catch this, there's the goal line, but actually, there's 28 seconds left on the clock and they've got two timeouts. What's a much better idea for me to do here is to fall to the floor, force the Patriots to either take one of those timeouts so they've got time left on the clock, or take time until we run our play, however you're going to end up doing it, either way making it more difficult.
And
for all of that to enter a player's head in the space of 3 seconds.
I don't think you penalise him for trying to score a touchdown. He could have caught that ball and still scored a touchdown. He didn't complete the catch. It's like saying, it's like me saying, well, you've thrown me the ball in the end zone, but I've dropped it, so I'm penalised for trying to score a touchdown. You complete the catch and it's a touchdown.
Yeah,
complete the play and it's a touchdown.
Had he been in the end zone and... brought 2 feet down, but as he was going to the floor, the ball spills out, no one would be complaining. He'd drop the ball. You know, the ball, he didn't complete the catch.
But it's more to do with that one in the Raiders game, because that touchback rule, and we've kind of suggested
but
it before.
What's the solution?
The reverse touchback. The reverse touchback. If you fumble it out of bounds anywhere else on the field, you get the ball back, right?
Yeah.
And it's the fact that the possession changes hands. That's what annoys me. If you did it that, all right, Derek Carr made a stupid decision in that situation to reach for the end zone when he could have just run out of bounds. He had plenty of time, whatever else. He made a bad decision, but you are then giving the ball back to the opposition. Give it back to the Raiders with the loss of down, but say at the 20-yard line. So it's a reverse touchback. That way, at least there's still an opportunity for them to make the end zone. The fact that it changes hands is ridiculous.
I'm fine with the rule.
I mean, the funniest part of the whole thing...
Ollie, no, hold on. Ollie, if you're fine with the rule, why shouldn't it change possession when it's fumbled out of bounds at the 50-yard line? Why should the Raiders get the ball back if one of their players has spilled out of bounds? Why is it any different?
Because it's special. It's
literally not any different.
It is. It's the end zone. Therefore, it's completely different.
No, but the problem, stuff being treated differently in the end zone, it's like stuff being treated differently in the penalty box in football, is one of our biggest problems in sport. If a foul is a foul, it's a foul anywhere on the pitch, whether it's in the penalty box or at the halfway line. The rule should not change because you've gone to the yard that indicates you've gone 100 yards or 0 yards versus the one that's at the midway.
I personally am a fan of the fact that in the red zone, because of that rule, you have to have, and because I think that makes in itself a more exciting play.
Also,
because you have to be more careful with the ball. I quite like it. I mean,
he likes it because his head coach is the king of situational football. And
well, you're being
but they're all playing by the same rule book. Will.
Exactly, and I think you're being a bit too, I don't know, romantic about it. I don't know.
What? You're the one who's saying it has to be special because it's in the red zone.
And it already is. If you look at rugby, the ball is kicked out at the back of the touchline. It's different.
It's a different sport. It's literally a different
football's
sport.
Football's a different sport to NFL. So, yeah, your point about the penalty box, therefore,
but what I'm saying is,
as well.
It may be a different sport, but it's very similar. Both teams have to get to this special place, the end zone or the try line and that whole area behind the try line. If the ball goes out there, it's depending on who touches it last, there's different rules. And that's just the way it is.
None of those teams, the Jets, the Rams, or the Raiders, deserved to have that ruled as a turnover for what happened in that game. In any way, shape, or form. He fumbled the ball.
He deserves to have it out of bounds,
which when it happens anywhere else on the field. So, by your reckoning, it should be changed. It should be a change of possession every time.
No.
Because they fumbled the ball.
I don't care what it is.
No. Sherry, I'm talking to Sherry. Sherry just said they fumbled the ball. He's saying that must be a turnover. So if you fumble the ball out of bounds, then it must be a turnover.
But it's exactly the same as fumbling the ball, and your player either jumps on it or the opposition does.
You make your decision to reach, because in two of those three situations, and probably in the third as well, although we don't really know Derek Carr's thinking, they were reaching for the pylon, and the rule is if the ball touches the pylon, you get a touchdown. They wouldn't have necessarily made the same move if they were between the hash marks. So they're reaching for a pylon, knowing that if it's fumbled out of bounds, what we're then doing is making it more likely that they're going to go for that play, which makes it more likely a scoring play, which increases the excitement of football. And you're making sure that the rules go in line with the rules everywhere else on the field, which is how I'd like to see it officiated.
But the flip side is, what if a defensive player makes a great play to strip the ball out, it goes out of the end zone and they just can't recover it, then they're not getting credited for a great play either. I mean, it's one of those rules. I can see your argument completely, and I'm just almost arguing for the sake of arguing. I don't feel heavily passionately either way, but I certainly don't think it's the worst rule in NFL history and should be changed. But if it is changed, that wouldn't bother me either.
I think it's the most ludicrous. I think of all the rules in the NFL right now, the way that it's adjudicated, the fact that it's a change of possession is a total mess. Like that's for me even more so than the catch rule, the most farcical rule in the NFL right now. And the fact that we've seen it happen, I think people would have been saying this for years if we'd had three occasions of it being a game-changing play in a single season years ago, but we haven't. It's happened this year, and that's why it's on the docket. And I think the competition committee need to be looking at it this off-season.
And I think
I'd be amazed if it wasn't at least on the docket, even if it doesn't change. It's got to be a conversation.
On the Patriots-Steelers, the final takeaway I have is, how anybody who isn't a Steelers fan can root for Ben Roethlisberger is just beyond me.
Well, I
a farce of an individual.
The way I feel about everything that happened there, I'm so kind of torn on it in many different ways. I think what has happened is we've been deprived of potentially Patriots Steelers in Pittsburgh again, which we've seen this weekend. What a great game that is! I don't think it's as good a game in Foxborough because I think the Steelers mentally will go there and just poop the bed.
Collapse.
I think that we've also been stripped of the fact that we'll get at least, like, I know we'll get a Jags home game in the wild card round, but the idea that they get a bye the rest week, all of that other stuff, which the Jags season this year looks like it deserves, the fact that we miss out getting to see the Patriots go on the road, which I think would be exciting to see them go on a road to a 1 or 2 seed because it would make for more competitive playoffs, all of that as a neutral fan is really disappointing. But for a veteran quarterback he can tell us that there was an argument between him and Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin and whoever else of whether they should spike it, whether anything else.
Totally ridiculous as well.
The communication with his team wasn't there. Only one of his players reacted to it knowing it was a fake spike. And you'll see the whole left side of his line, receivers and line, didn't move at all, which meant your defense didn't react on that side at all. Only one player reacted. They went for a slant route on a fake spike from the 2-yard line, which is a terrible choice of play anyway, because what you're doing is taking... If the defence don't react at all, you're still putting the player right in the middle of four defenders, which potentially costs them. Everything about it was dreadful. The moment he saw the way that play was developing, he should have just thrown it over the receiver's head and out the back of the end zone, lost the down, taken the field goal. That's what a veteran quarterback should be doing.
And a veteran quarterback also shouldn't be trying to throw the coaches under the bus. And I mean, I don't love the Pittsburgh coach. I think I've made that clear on this show. But it was absolutely the right move not to spike the ball, given that it would have immediately meant that they had to kick the field goal. Obviously, you have a play, try and run a play to win the game. They should be coaching that better, obviously, but it was the right call. Roethlisberger was suggesting they could spike it, have a throw, and then, oh, they'll just let us kick the field goal on fifth down, which wasn't going to happen. And more than that, you just look at the whole season, the off-season of pretending that he was going to retire. The fact that in every meaningful game I watch him play, he's limping around and shaking this part of his body and this part of his body, and he's injured this, and then the next thing he's running 15 yards downfield. Give me a break.
And it also
says, he's so into himself. And do I think it crossed his mind that he wanted to throw the winning pass? Absolutely. He is absolutely in love with himself at the detriment of everything else. Painful. And that doesn't even get into some of the off-field stuff that we're not going to bore people with and discuss, but not a good guy.
And it says a lot when people aren't talking about him in the MVP conversation and they're talking about Antonio Brown, who, had he remained in the game and not torn or partially torn his calf muscle, he's going to be out for the rest of the regular season, who knows how long into the off-season, into the playoffs. And by the way, them losing that game means that they may end up having to play in the wild card round, perhaps without Antonio Brown, maybe with Antonio Brown not fully fit. All of that.
There's no danger of that, though. They'll definitely win the last two games.
They've got the Texans and the Browns and the last 2 weeks. Okay, I think that the it's fallen for them really nicely that they've got now 4 weeks until Antonio Brown has to play football again. And I think actually for the neutral fan, no matter how you feel about Ben or Mike Tomlin, we all love watching Antonio Brown ball out, right?
What a guy.
And I was absolutely gutted when he got carried off. And do you know what, Matt? That's tremendous from you. Commendable, because...
Oh, right, guys.
You know, being a Patriots fan, but moreover a football fan. And you don't want to see players out.
You want to beat their best. Also, I hope, but what the Steelers should do is look at their game plan that they had to use because Brown was out, which was controlling the ball, winning on third down. That is absolutely the way for the Steelers to beat the Patriots. And I would hope that they see that, and even with Brown back, adopt the same game plan, because I'm not sure they would have on offense. I think they'd have backed themselves a little bit more to chuck the ball downfield and take a few more risks. Actually, the way they played it was perfect. And I would hope and think that the coaching staff should look at that and think, well, we can do that exact game plan, but it'll be a lot better with Antonio Brown.
I think Martavis Bryant, we saw Juju Smith-Schuster, it had obviously that massive play, which was a lot to do with blown coverage as well. But between them and Le'Veon Bell, there's enough playmakers still there without Antonio Brown to win those last two games. And I'm confident that the Steelers... We're now looking at Pat Steelers. Jags will seal up the third seed if they beat the 49ers this coming weekend. It's starting to really shape up on the AFC side. And we should talk about those Jacksonville Jaguars. They're back in the playoffs for the first time in a decade after a 42-7 win over the Houston Texans. And for the third straight game, Blake Bortles played really well. And I can say after the Colts game, as I did on this show, but it was against the Colts. And we said after the Seahawks, he made some incredible throws, but let's not forget how many injuries they've got. And we can say that about the Texans as well. But when you're putting three games back-to-back-to-back that have been as impressive as these three have, he leads the NFL in yards per attempt, he leads the NFL in touchdown-to-interception ratio, he leads the NFL in passer and QBR ratings across those three games. And what really impressed me about this game is that, and we had it on in the office, so I saw a bulk of it, with guys like Jaden Mickens, who was sleeping in his car 3 months ago, with guys like Keenan Cole, these guys who have come off the practice squad, he was throwing passes that we've never seen Blake Bortles throw. The confidence was so much higher. This wasn't the usual story of Bortles' numbers look good, but it all came in garbage time. This was a truly, truly good performance. And it made me just believe enough that with the defence they've got, which we've talked about time and time again, that there is some encouraging signs they can win playoff games with this team.
I mean, I would give the coaching staff a huge amount of credit, because that Arizona game, they blew that game by not trusting balls at all, and they badly bungled the end of the game situation, largely because they didn't want them to throw the ball. And I don't think it's a coincidence that since that, they've done the opposite, and they've really opened it up for him and kind of given him a chance to shine. I think he's feasted on some fortuitous situations in that. I mean, the Texans' defence has been as bad as any in the NFL this year as well. But if I'm looking at it from a Jacksonville perspective, you've got to hope that ultimately the confidence from those three games, we know he can be a talented guy. If that confidence allows him to play like that against good defences as well, then watch out, because we said earlier on in the season that if they get any level of quarterback play, this team is the most dangerous team in the NFL. Right now, would put money on them playing the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. I know we've just discussed the Steelers, but I don't even think it gets to that point, because I think this Jaguars team is very well built to beat the Steelers. And right now, I would, if they played tomorrow, even at Heinz Field, I'd back them to win. And I also think that they could give the Patriots some real hell. I mean, it's tough back-to-back to do that. That would be an insane way to get to the Super Bowl. But I would be more scared playing Jacksonville than I would Pittsburgh as a Patriots fan.
I'm not going to lie, Championship Sunday, if it's Jags, Patriots, and whatever we get out of the NFC, where the top five seeds right now, none of whom went to the playoffs last season, I don't care who matches up from those teams, those all look like great games. That could be the best Championship Sunday we've had in years. That's really exciting, Ollie.
Yeah. The Jags are playing so well, and hearing Tony Boselli on TalkSport yesterday, just he was saying that they could be Super Bowl bound, and if they're in the AFC Championship game, as Matt Sherry said that they could be, or he expects that, he'd put money on it. They're one game away from the Super Bowl, and this defense is outstanding, so good. Bortles is playing really well. They've discovered some wide receivers that are shifty and can catch the ball and are quick. And they did all of this without Leonard Fournette.
It's
scary.
I'm glad you brought up the Leonard Fournette point, because he's had a lot of little niggling injuries, muscle injuries, you know, everything that's kind of kept him in and out of games. I would consider next week against the 49ers, who admittedly stopped the Titans run game a decent amount at the weekend, but I would consider whether or not you, if you play him, you keep him in quite low rotation, keep him on a snap count, and try and keep
him on a snap count until the wild card.
Yeah, exactly.
No point.
Fresh as possible going into that first week in the playoffs. I'm talking 10 carries a game max, because Chris Ivory was good at the weekend. TJ Yeldon isn't a bad change of pace back against a bad team, and then allow them to ride Leonard Fournette like they did earlier in the season when they're going against good teams.
And you've got Corey Grant as well, who incredibly has looked,
yeah, where's the depth come from on this, yeah, Jaguars team? Suddenly they're deep. That's not something that happens like suddenly to a team after they've been bad for years.
Exactly. So they've got four running backs there who are all making plays. Going to the 49ers next week, a game that you and I will be watching together, Will Gavin.
Oh, we will, on Christmas Eve, going into Christmas Day as well.
With our Chinese devils on horseback.
We're going to be riding into Christmas Day on a TJ Yeldon two-yard run up the middle. And what a day it's going to be.
It's going to be glorious.
Just before me and Ollie made the welcome
break. For your KFC Christmas dinner. The Rams-Seahawks game is one of the other ones we've got to talk about in some depth. The changing of the NFC West guard for this season, at least. Because Los Angeles, you want to talk about a statement game. To go to the clink and to put this much of a hurting on the Seahawks and do it through being genuine, like, I know the Seahawks are hurting, and Bobby Wagner was playing at, you know, 20% barely. Him and Earl Thomas and their spat afterwards was no surprise to see at all. And in fact, the way that they kind of were chippy by the start of the second half really shows the mentality of the Seahawks team has just completely gone this year. The injuries have been too much for them, and they've just kind of completely lost it at this point.
I mean, it threatens to go every year, doesn't it? It's always on a knife edge.
This has been the year where finally it's teetered over to the bad side, because they are looking like a team on implosion. Do not be surprised to not see them playing in January at all. But
and when we all love that.
Isn't there an argument as well for the Seahawks that they almost could do with that? This isn't a Super Bowl team, no matter how well Russell Wilson plays. Even if he comes out and has the next four games are the best four games of his career, and they do get to the playoffs, and I still don't think they've got enough defensively to be able to handle playoff teams. Might it not be better to get a slightly higher pick, get yourselves in order, get that kick up the backside that missing the playoffs might do for that team? Because there are plenty of moves for them to make in order to get things fixed. Firing offensive coordinators to start with, dealing with the problem in the front office when it comes to trying to protect Russell Wilson. Those problems which they've kind of glossed over for the last 5 years.
Firing the most overrated positional coach in the NFL in Tom Cable.
Yeah, all of that. Literally all of that. Get it dealt with, get it done, and realise the threat that is in your division now, and react to it. Because the NFC West could be brilliant for years to come. If you give the 49ers a couple of years now, they've got a quarterback to kind of to stock up on talent. And I mean, even the Cardinals, if there's enough defensive talent there that they could restock and still be a competitive team.
Yeah, and especially if given that they're going to sign Lamar Jackson next season as well.
So convinced.
I'm so convinced. But you've got David Johnson to come back, and that defense still has the bones of being a very good defense. I think John Schneider from the Seahawks has got a lot to answer for, because 7 sacks that offensive line gave up on Russell Wilson, the most elusive of all the running backs. We saw that play of all quarterbacks. We saw that play on Sunday where he avoided Donald and Quinn and ran round and about and then up and then down and still,
he picked up that first down.
Ludicrous. And that should have been another sack, and countless other occasions, I'm sure. When you continue, like Schneider and Carroll have done, to not protect Wilson, I think it's dereliction of duty, and he has to go. Because, alright, you've got this great defense, and keep adding little bits to it here and there, and sign Jimmy Graham and then not use him properly. But you've got one of the best quarterbacks to have played the game in the last 5 or 6 years, and you're not protecting him. I think it's a disgrace.
I don't think anyone would pretend, though, that as much as Schneider's a very good talent evaluator in the GM, Pete Carroll makes the personnel decisions in Seattle. That's the way the model was built when they managed to persuade him to leave for USC. So I think a lot of the blame lies with Carroll, to be honest. I think Schneider, in terms of just purely evaluating talent, has as good a record as anybody in the NFL. But I don't think the issue is finding talent for Seattle. I think the issue is entirely just their philosophy of, oh, well, we've got a guy like Russell Wilson, so we don't need a good O-line. But they don't need a good O-line, but an average one every once in a while would be a nice change.
An average one would be a delight. From the Rams' perspective, a few things to say. I mean, Aaron Donald, we've heaped praise on, and everyone has for years now, but he was unblockable, unbelievable this weekend. Todd Gurley, at the start of the season, there was literally question marks over whether Todd Gurley was ever going to reach the level of the player that he was in his rookie season. Todd Gurley has been hands down the best running back in the NFL this year, and I'm not sure it's actually even that close with Le'Veon Bell.
It's not remotely close, is it?
And you add to that brilliant special teams play, you add to that a quarterback who's getting it done, an offensive line who they're the only team, and there's an element of obviously fortune to this, that they are the only team of 32 who have returned the same 5 starters on the offensive line with every single game. But when you consider those guys include Roger Saffold and Andrew Whitworth, who's, you know, average age makes them old enough to be Ollie's dad, there is
and I mean, they are older than the head coach as well, which is hilarious.
Yeah, there is. It's just all kind of come together for this Rams team in the right moment. The losses to the Vikings on the road, they I think they showed some... I think McVay in particular showed a couple of the rookie weaknesses, but he seems to have learned from that. The Eagles game was just almost like a freak game and some terrible officiating and some weird decisions. There is a real feeling with this Rams team going into playoffs that they've got as good a chance as any of those other teams in the NFC of going to the Super Bowl.
I don't think they have a chance of getting to the Super Bowl, I must admit. And that might sound over the top, but I disagree with you what you said about the Vikings and the Eagles games and that. I think they're a very well-coached team, but they ran into better teams. I mean, the Vikings handled them completely. That was men against boys, and I think it's
clear
the Vikings...
I don't know if it was. You had a drop in the fourth quarter on the goal line. I think it was Cooper Kupp, which was the difference between them going ahead in the fourth quarter and losing by two touchdowns. They don't fumble that ball, then the Rams go ahead with 10 minutes left to play. That's not being
right. I've completely just changed the history of that game in my mind because I forgot about that. As you said, it was like, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I disagree with everything I've just said. The Rams are going to the Super Bowl, guaranteed.
But the Vikings defense did handle them for huge swathes of that
game.
Yeah,
they did. I mean, there's just something at the back of my mind with the Rams. I think it's Goff. I'm not a huge believer yet in Goff in terms of. Money's on the line, I'm not convinced he'll win you the game. I think they're a great front runner. I think when they do what they did yesterday, they're very difficult to play against, and that's why we've seen them basically pulverise teams a couple of times this year, because I think they're really difficult when they get up on you, and but I think if you get up on them, they could make mistakes quickly.
Right, shall we move on and talk about the only other games I had that we needed to cover in a bit more depth? I think Packers-Panthers, I'm afraid, Ollie, we do need to talk about.
Yeah.
The Carolina Panthers ran out 31-24 winners over the Green Bay Packers, and that's maybe a slightly flattering scoreline for the Packers as well, who got a late touchdown, the onside recovery, before Geronimo Allison fumble on the catch. Of course, that one was a catch. Was the difference between these two teams in the end. The real difference between these two teams is Aaron Rodgers clearly wasn't ready to start playing football again, Ollie.
He was rusty.
I think you take the interceptions, and he obviously looks bad. He underthrew another six passes on top of those three interceptions, and all three interceptions were bad.
Yeah, all three interceptions were bad. He was rusty. He made some poor decisions. However, he did make some good throws, and he did make some good decisions, and he put his body on the line, and he made some good runs. And I just think him being there was the reason why it was close, why they still had something.
I thought the Packers missed a trick by not running the ball more. I think they were way too excited with the fact that Rodgers was back.
I agree with you there as well. 45 times they threw the ball, 19 times they ran it. Aaron Jones.
And what was the average? I mean, Jones looked really good every time I saw him with the ball.
He touched the ball three times, so for 47 yards. So that's on Mike McCarthy.
I mean, the whole not being in the playoffs is on Mike McCarthy, and I mean, it's a minor miracle he had any chance to be in it. But there's big decisions to be made there, and they need to. I would be cleaning house completely.
Teflon Don's got to go. Teflon Dom's got to go. That defense can no answer for Christian McCaffrey whatsoever in the early parts. Cam Newton, did you hear the Cam Newton Clay Matthews exchange that was very funny?
Yeah, that was great.
Clay Matthews on the field. If you haven't heard this, Matt, Clay Matthews spotted a Panthers offensive formation that he'd seen on film in the red zone, where they go a wheel route to Christian McCaffrey, and they've done it a couple of times this year already. And Clay Matthews went, "It's the wheel route, it's the wheel route," to his defensive players. Cam shouted back at him, "Oh, you've been studying film, have you?" He said yes, and he went, "Watch this then." And they audible to a fake wheel route slant, which Christian McCaffrey took him for a touchdown.
Untouched.
It was incredible.
They've been playing it on Sky Sports News all day. Just to rub it in my face whilst I'm at work with Sky Sports News on one of the monitors above
just,
me.
Just going, "Watch this then," and then going to the fake wheel route into a slant. It was great. It was really funny.
My big takeaway from this is that if Cam Newton plays like that, the Panthers are the hardest team in the NFL. to play against if he plays like he does the last 2 weeks.
And so the fact that
he's playing as well now as he was 2 years ago.
They still didn't have the consistency in the right. What I kind of like is that their offense has become this kind of hybrid offense between what they wanted to do this year with Christian McCaffrey and what they actually did in 2015 that worked. And they've managed to find a bit of balance between that, which is why McCaffrey was so good early on. But then they revert to a bit more of the run, a bit more relying on Newton. I still think the Packers defense have got a lot to answer for. Across the course of the game. I think the Panthers-Vikings as a matchup, particularly if it happens in Minnesota, that's the one which, from a kind of old-school, pure football perspective, is the one that looks toughest and really exciting.
It's so exciting. Like, it's the dream, isn't it? I'm so pumped for the prospect of that.
What you've got is two great defenses there, and the Panthers' defense is playing really, really well. But as you said, Will, with McCaffrey being pretty spicy out of the backfield and being able to catch the ball as well as an actual slot receiver guy, Cam Newton, he ran 14 times, more than any other player, which is a lot of option, a lot of designed quarterback rushes as well. And then Greg Olsen, okay, he doesn't seem to have his old zip. He looks a bit more like Jason Witten now than any other tight end. But he made hay down the middle, and that's where
And he's still a huge upgrade on Ed Dixon, isn't he?
Ed Hansenstone Dixon. And that's where you look at Dom Capers and the Packers' defense, and the problem of big tight ends, wide receivers down the middle with lots of time and room on a soft zone where the safeties and the corners have no clue who they're picking up, what they're doing. It's like when you watch zonal marking in football with at corners, and the team who have the zonal marking system have no idea what's going on, who to pick up, what to do, and that's exactly what was going on with the Packers and has been going on with the Packers for at least the last 2.5 seasons.
It's been a lot longer than that, Ollie.
Well, short term memory is better than my long term.
Just think back to the Kaepernick games as well. I mean, those were like 5-6 years ago now.
Yeah, don't remind me of that either. Thanks, mate. There are two other storylines from this game that we need to discuss. The first is the fact that the Carolina Panthers are up for sale. Jerry Richardson is giving up day-to-day control of the team. This is obviously a direct reaction to the accusations last week of both sexual and racial inappropriate comments and misconduct within the workplace. Amazing that the owner of the team is being investigated by the team's internal lawyers for these claims. So at least there's a little bit of clarity there. It's something we can get more into in the off-season. It's going to be a fascinating process to see what happens there.
I mean, the NFL is still planning to investigate it, even though he's put the team up for sale, which I think is hugely interesting.
Massively so.
Have you seen that Diddy wants to buy it?
Yeah, I've seen that Diddy wants to buy it. And Steph Curry wants to get involved, and they
Kaepernick
want to sign.
Does.
I mean, signing Colin Kaepernick as a backup to Cam Newton actually makes quite a lot of sense.
But I think Kaepernick wants in on the ownership group, so I'm wondering whether he can play and own the team as well.
But I'm not sure he's got the money to be in on the ownership team in anything but a very, very silent partnership.
And given the reaction of Kaepernick by our Uber driver when we were in Carolina, I'm not sure it would be the greatest.
I forgot that was in Carolina that happened. Wow.
I remembered it earlier on.
That guy would lose it. But then there was the Thomas Davis hit on Davante Adams, which is going to see him get us 2-game suspension. It was a nasty hit in terms of that he led with the crown of his helmet when... Yes, when you watch the play at full speed, it's difficult to necessarily lead with your chest, your hands, when you're making that sort of block. And there's the argument that Thomas Davis isn't a man who is used to blocking. You're not doing a lot of training. Like, you compare it with the Juju Smith-Schuster block, where he led with his helmet rather than his chest and his hands. You say, well, you should be training to block. That's part of your job as a receiver.
On the subject of players who should be suspended, he definitely should be for reenacting that as a celebration.
Yeah, 100%. But we're talking about Thomas Davis right now.
I'll go back to the Gronk celebration later.
there's an argument going on in our WhatsApp group about this versus the Gronkowski suspension. Thomas Davis, as Matt Sherry pointed out, has had innumerable fines, a dozen or so fines for hits in games, and so they've gone from those fines to a suspension situation. The fact is, he's going to appeal it. And when was the last time that you remembered an in-game penalty that didn't have it reduced, that was a multiple game penalty?
Well, that's it. Gronkowski's wasn't, but I think that was because they didn't want the furore of giving him two and then reducing it to one when the two would have meant he missed Pittsburgh. You know, I think they actually thought about that. But yeah, this will be reduced to one anyway. Yeah. So our argument in the group will be meaningless.
Yeah, and that's always the case, but it needs to stop being the case. Gronkowski's, I still maintain, should have been a two-game suspension regardless. Doesn't matter who's coming up on the schedule. There was intent there, and it doesn't matter that he's not normally a dirty player. That was a bad play. For Thomas Davis, I completely understand why it's two, because of the history of the player. But you do also have to say that not only was he clearly upset and incredibly reticent on the field, but to then go and tweet to Devontae Adams and apologise so openly about it as well. Like, Thomas Davis doesn't strike me as a bad guy. Neither does Rob Gronkowski. I think that was a bad play, but I don't think there was any kind of malice or intent to it. Whereas you could argue what happened with Juju Smith-Schuster, the emotion of the game got to him, which you wouldn't say is the same for Thomas Davis.
Yeah, and when you look at Thomas Davis's instant reaction when Devontae Adams is laid out on the ground with numerous amounts of staff around him trying to make sure that he's okay, Davis is on the sideline, head in hands, aghast at what he's caused and what he's done. You look at it back to me, and I'm a staunch Packers fan as that you're likely to meet, and I've seen a load on Twitter who ripping into Davis, saying he's a bad guy, this and that. I think it's a coming together. I don't think he goes out to hurt him. Devontae Adams has tweeted pretty much the opposite of that, saying, look, it's football, but there's no room for like that. We're supposed to look at to be in this together and look out for one another and not mess with a man's livelihood. Look, I don't think Davis meant to do it. Only Thomas Davis knows. For me, I don't think it was that bad a hit, and thankfully Adams hopefully will be okay for next week. He went into concussion protocol as he should have done.
Right, should we take a quick break and then just rattle through the remaining games from this weekend that we've not covered yet?
Yeah, because we've got like 5 minutes.
Beautiful. Right, there are a number of games that happened this weekend that had big playoff implications, none more so particularly after we talked about the Raiders lost than Saturday night in the AFC West, as I think a game that probably is the one that a lot of us got wrong this weekend, the Chiefs and the Chargers. A lot of us were high on the Chargers going into this game, the performances of Keenan Allen, their defense, their pass rush, their corners. But for the Chiefs, after such a horrendous collapse from their 5-0 start to the season, this was really a good all-round performance. It was still a tight game late on, much like that one we talked about earlier between the Rams and the Vikings, but every facet of the Chiefs worked for the first time in quite a while, Matt.
This I watched this game in full at about 5:30 on Sunday morning, and
so rock and roll.
I know, isn't it? On my computer with the cricket. Oh, the cricket, Matt. The cricket on the TV. Let's not. But what this game reminded me of was the Chiefs in those first 4 or 5 weeks when everything was going for them. Kareem Hunt had 201 yards on this game, 155-something through on the ground and 50-something through the air. And you know, you had Kelsey making plays, you had Tyreek Hill making plays, Alex Smith looking pretty good, but it was all down for me on offense to the way Matt Nagy managed to get Kareem Hunt in space up against defenders that weren't used to being able to try and tackle someone like Kareem Hunt. I thought it was brilliantly played by the Chiefs offensive coordinator, Matt.
It was, yeah, and I mean, I think the Chiefs are making the AFC playoff race a little bit more interesting, because I still remember them from the start of the season, and they've had the horrific blip in the middle of it all where I thought they'd been found out, but maybe they haven't been found out. Maybe they're getting it rolling again, and if they do get it rolling again, then they're another potential legitimate contender in the AFC. The Chargers just became
the charges again, which is sad given what had happened.
It's a really interesting situation, the AFC playoff picture at this moment, because the Chargers coming up have got the Jets and the Raiders, both eminently winnable games. Say they go to 9-7, they're relying on a number of teams above them to lose a game or two games. And actually, you look at those teams on 8-6, the Bills have to go to New England, the Titans have to face the Rams and the Jags, the Ravens, they're the easier of the routes, Colts, Bengals, but you wouldn't be that surprised to see two or three teams jockeying at 9-7 for the sixth seed. So the Chargers aren't out of it yet, but they did themselves no favours on Saturday night. And I think the Chiefs...
Absolutely. I assume, Will, that you changed your picks from the one that you tweeted out, given that you got 15 out of 15 so far on the picks challenge.
I did, because when Marcus Peters was announced, I think I tweeted about it, saying that with Marcus Peters being back in the game, I fancy the Chiefs at home.
No, I'm not. I'm not suggesting that you never, but what I'm saying is, like...
Did I get 15? I didn't get 15 for 15. I didn't get last night right, did I?
Yeah, you were on 15 out of 15.
I meant to pick the Raiders. I won 15 and 15 by accident. I was 100% convinced the Raiders were going to win last night.
Three people are on 15 from 15. I'm on 14 from 15, and this was the game that I got wrong. But me and Ollie, outside of that one game, picked, I think, a perfect slate the podcast the other day.
Boys, you're doing you're assuming that tonight the Falcons are going to beat the Buccaneers.
Come on, the Buccaneers! Falcons win, Packers are out. Bucks win. You're telling me there's a chance? Now, interesting, sorry, I'll jump in there. Rob Demovsky has tweeted that Joe Callahan, who was waived by the Packers to make room for Rodgers, has since been picked up again. Meaning, I think, and Demovsky says this, what happens with the result between the Falcons and the Bucks, of which everyone knows what happened, that will determine whether they keep Aaron Rodgers active or not.
So, just to roll through the rest of those AFC teams.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys.
Bills, Dolphins. Bills, actually, it wasn't their best performance, but they're putting together a bit of a run, and they're looking like, after a complete falling apart after that Jets game 6 or 7 weeks ago, they're right back in the playoff mix now. Jay Cutler doing incredibly Jay Cutler things in that game. The Dolphins might as well tank the rest of the season to get the best draft pick they possibly can. The Browns are going 0-16, aren't they?
Oh. I have no sympathy anymore, I must admit. I've checked out on Hugh Jackson as a human being. Well,
I think the Browns.
Well, he might end
Bengals,
up in Cincinnati, getting compensation.
Which will be, honestly, that will be the best thing ever.
I think they're going to swap. Marv Lewis will end up being the Browns head coach. Hugh Jackson, the Bengals.
He will be a huge upgrade on Hugh Jackson.
The Ohio swap, as they're going to call it for years to come. And the Ravens, again, they look like an interesting team for a playoff run, and have got the easiest slate of the three or four teams sitting around that 8-6 area, so don't be counting them out yet. Titans have had a horrible time out on the West Coast.
That was very funny.
The loss to the Cardinals was genuinely dreadful. This loss to the 49ers may be even worse. To be up that late in the game against a quarterback only making his fifth start in the NFL.
In fairness, Will, he is now 5-0. What a man.
I'm not allowing myself to get as excited as I got on Sunday night. Ollie will tell you that I was beaming ear to ear for a period of time.
You should be beaming ear to ear, mate. You're winning the Super Bowl next year.
It's the absolute lack of talent around him that's amazing. Because, I mean, actually, I think they've really found something in Trent Taylor, the slot receiver. I think he'll be a guy that will stick around for a number of years. I also quite like George Kittle, the tight end. I also quite like Marquise Goodwin. But none of them are number one guys. You need a number one receiver in there, and maybe a better tight end as well.
A better running back.
Yeah, I forgot about Garcon. And a really good draft. This could be, you know, an exciting team next season to watch. I'm not saying anything better than, you know, 500, but what an upgrade that'd be on the last 2 years.
The great thing you've got, Will, is Kyle Shanahan allows you to spend less money on certain skill position players, because there are certain players that fit his scheme that aren't necessarily heavily sought after. And we're seeing that again with Marquise Goodwin. We saw it with Taylor Gabriel. I mentioned to you Alfred Morris last night as a guy who was great for him in Washington. Particularly at running back, he can find guys for less money because there's certain guys fit his scheme.
that don't fit a lot of others in the NFL.
Agreed.
And what about Robbie Gould?
What a guy. What a man. What a guy. Did you watch his... did you see his press conference afterwards as well?
No, why would I watch his press conference? He's a kicker for a team I don't support.
There was a lot...
Even watch Mason Crosby's press conferences.
Why not?
The only press conference...
I love Kylo Santos. Do the bang. I don't even watch his press conferences.
What I love about this is it's Ollie that told me about the press conference while we were on air on Sunday night, and now he's trying to play it cool.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Robbie Gould saying afterwards... about how he... definitely made the right decision to go to San Francisco. He knows that there's going to be a winning mentality there. Like, he really went all in on the team in his press conference afterwards, after his second 5-field goal game of the season. What a guy. What a guy.
And he looked so finished, didn't he, a couple of years ago?
Oh, so finished.
Comeback player of the year, question mark.
Get out. Honestly, just get out.
It might be one of the best shouts you've ever made, Matt. NFC playoff picture, few massive results here. The Saints stripping one out against the Jets, despite it having to be late on. But I occasionally like a gritty win from a team that I want to do well in the playoffs, because I like to see that they can win more than one way. Sometimes grinding one out against a tough team to beat is just as good as going and hammering.
Especially as a Saints fan. I mean, that's exactly what they haven't been able to do for the last 3 years. Like, that is way more important than anything for the Saints, is to win those kinds of games, because they haven't done recently.
And most importantly, Alvin Kamara back with the team after missing a couple of weeks with a concussion, looking really good through the air, not so much on the ground, but you've got Mark Ingram on the ground, it doesn't really matter. So, you know, the Saints still with Michael Thomas as their receiver, they're just having a lovely offensive year.
Michael Thomas, the last 5 weeks, it's been a little under the radar because of how good Keenan Allen and Antonio Brown have been. Michael Thomas has played like a top five receiver the last 5 weeks. He has been superb in that offense. It fits him so well. He's been brilliant in possession. He's racked up the yards. He could have had 3 touchdowns if it wasn't for a kind of slight problem with footing, but he had a touchdown on the day, plenty of yards as well. He was really impressive. The Vikings cruised past the Bengals. You know, the Bengals are one of the worst teams in football right now, but important to bounce back after Case Keenum had a tough week last week, I think. Weird game for the Eagles with the Giants. 34-29, they finish up winners. And they were... Nick Foles, 4 touchdowns, no turnovers. The run game wasn't massively there, but I think that had a lot to do with game flow rather than the ability of the run game. Special teams was brilliant.
I think it has a lot to do with the ability of the run game.
Well, I think special teams was brilliant. I think the problem here was the defense letting up 29 points, and it would have been more if not for a blocked field goal and a blocked extra point. This had been a 1-point game on that basis alone.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, this is another win for the Eagles that if I was an Eagles fan would feel like a defeat, because once it gets in the playoffs, they need this defense to play like it did earlier in the season. And that's 2 weeks in a row now where teams have put up 30, I think, on them. And Nick Foles is not throwing 4 touchdown passes in a playoff game against a good defense.
Also, if you look at the numbers on those passes, the longest, other than a catch and run from Ajayi of 32, is 19 yards. So they've brought the playbook in about 10 yards from where Carson Wentz was starting to throw passes and long balls and deep balls out to Aguilar et al. So I don't know whether that's because that's his first game as the number one starter, or that's how they're going to play with Nick Foles and not launch the ball. I seem to remember when Nick Foles was almost a viable starter that he was a guy that could launch the ball and throw the ball fast. So I'd like to think, if I were an Eagles fan, that they will expand that playbook out and get him to throw some bigger and better passes. Maybe it had something to do with the game flow and the fact that the defense was allowing the Giants to come back in. So there are a myriad of things.
But the thing is, that is the Andy Reid style offense, is short passes. And I mean, they expanded it a little bit for Carson Wentz because they've got such an obscene talent on their hands there, but ultimately that is the offense, and that's why the offense gets into such problems. That's why they were in 3rd and 6 more than any other team in the league this season, and that was a point I made earlier in the week to you guys. Like, it's a problem. That is a problem with the scheme of the offense. I don't think that'll change. Yep.
This insanely long podcast needs to come to an end at some point, but I just want to mention the Detroit Lions. 20-10 win over the Bears on Saturday night. not the most impressive of performances. Don't think they've put in a massively impressive performance over the last 4 or 5 weeks. But they've moved themselves up to 8-6. The Falcons have to play the Panthers and the Saints, which obviously means that the Panthers and the Saints have to also play the Falcons.
Well done,
the
mate.
Lions, thanks, mate. Thanks, mate.
That was great Columbo work.
Just one final thing.
Well, just one final thing.
It's great to be on the Orient Express with Poirot.
You cannot believe they play each other.
So the Bengals, but the Lions.
Sorry, who are the Lions playing again?
The Lions have the Bengals and likely a Brett Hundley-led Packers. The Lions could easily go 10-6 and make it into the wild card. Jim Caldwell could take this Lions team to the playoffs yet again and give them 3 winning seasons from the 4 he's been there, despite the fact that we've all been convinced that he's not a very good head coach for the entire time. Just say it.
I'll tell you what, as a subplot to that, remember the Detroit-Atlanta game earlier in the year that is probably going to cost them a playoff place.
The Greg Rosenthal tweeted, Lions pre-Caldwell, 12 losing seasons out of 13. Lions under Caldwell, 1 losing season out of 4. It's not
what
bad.
What a coach.
Not bad. And there's what's amazing about this weekend, in week 15, there really should be a lot of games which don't mean anything. There's only really one game which didn't mean anything. Does anyone want to talk about Washington, Arizona?
No.
Great stuff, guys. Okay.
Did they play?
Apparently. Washington won, I remember, because I picked it. 20-15? Was it?
Just I couldn't care less.
Genuinely plucking that out of the air. I think it was 20-15. We're going to get some stick from some Washington fans, but I actually...
It was 20-15.
Yeah, go on, Willie.
Whoa, Drew Stanton's going to start next week.
So there is a storyline to talk about. Damn it.
Bruce Arians has been gabbeted way too much.
We'll be back later in the week to look back on Thursday Night Football.
What about Monday Night Football?
Here's what's going to happen.
There isn't a Thursday Night Football this week. No.
There isn't. Here's what's going to happen here.
Are we recording?
What are we doing on the Will Gavin show this week? Yeah,
here's what's going to happen here.
Come on, Columbo.
If the Falcons beat the Buccaneers, we're just going to end the podcast right here. If the Buccaneers beat the Falcons, I'll do a quick 30 seconds on the end of the podcast about how the Lions are definitely going to the playoffs. Okay?
What about the Packers? They could make it to the playoffs.
The Lions are definitely going to the playoffs, like I said. Ollie, any final thoughts?
I loved Gronk's celebration. For his
Which
touchdown.
One? Can I just say his best moment of the night was when he was laid on his back and he did the first down point while on his back. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen that. That's great. Who was it against? It was against a defender who he just kind of shrugged off. Who fell to the floor, and then he just laughed at him.
I completely forgot about that. Davis launched himself at him, bounced off Gronk, and Gronk turned around and just laughed at him.
His celebration was, ha ha, you just fell off. I can't believe it. I don't know why he turned into a German, but it made sense.
I'll just say, no matter how much you hate the Patriots, watching him and Brady on that drive was just...
Yeah,
NFL porn.
Yeah, 100%. I just wish that it was a team I liked. I love you, buddy. Matt, any final thoughts?
Can't wait for the next weekend, although we've wished the season away now, haven't we? It's heartbreaking that there's only 2 weeks left.
Nah, it's going to be great. Yeah. Christmas next weekend. I think, Ollie, what we should be doing, and this is kind of the plan, Matt Sherry, if you want to join us. I mean, maybe you'll have to be up early to drive to the service station anyway. on Christmas Eve, we're doing the Jags 49ers game on Talk Sports.
Yeah.
You're then working the overnight show with me, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Shall we just do from 3 till 4 a.m. the Gridiron Show on Talk Sport and then release it as a podcast?
100% we should.
Brilliant. We'll get Greg Rosenthal on because he comes on a Tuesday morning quite often anyway. So we'll just do him like as a Sunday night, Monday morning thing. Yeah. Do a chat with him. Maybe see if we can get a Jags player on as well after they've won.
Well, Buscelli might come on.
Buscelli might come on. So we'll try and get a couple of guests on. And then that we can then just release that Christmas morning as a little review of Week 16 so far podcast. And then do a bit more of an in-depth one with the guys on like Boxing Day or something.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a great idea. I don't know why we haven't done that before.
And if you want to come on air at like 3 a.m, Matt Sherry, if maybe little Brady's awake and kicking and screaming, then pop your headset on and we'll chat.
Yeah, well, if that happens, I'll do it, Matt.
Does he have a temper, little Brady?
Oh, outrageous.
much like his dad, red sherry.
I'd only
experienced red sherry in a couple of occasions at the Super Bowl when he's really not been in a good mood. But we've all been like that. It's a very long time to spend in very close quarters with each other.
When have I last returned?
But now, Matt Sherry, that I've seen you when you're betting on games and they're not going your way, the wrath of Matt Sherry against players and teams, particularly play callers, is amazing.
There's nothing I hate at the NFL more than bad coaching. I think that's what really irritates me the most.
Right. Unless we've got a little Falcons Bucks thing on the end here, thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. We'll catch you later in the week. This has been the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game.
Yes, you.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.